Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 18, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we're having a very special West Wing podcast. I've been threatening it for several weeks, and basically I was late to the game by, I think, a decade. And I just watched the show very recently, cranked through it. It's at breakneck speed, and now I actually want to talk about it. And it's kind of hard to find people who are still, you know, up on the show. And I chose this week to do it because it was 4th of July weekend last week, and everything this week was pretty much a repeat, except for the premiere of Eureka, which we will be talking about at length. And we'll go around the room and introduce everyone who is participating in this podcast.
Hi, I'm Julia, and I watched West Wing the first time around on television.
Snooty.
Mm-hmm. I'm Lisa, and I watched the first four seasons of West Wing. About mid-season of five, I was out, but it was my favorite show, the first four seasons.
I'm Tony, and I'm from Los Angeles, and I watched West Wing the old-fashioned way, week after week.
I'm Brian, I'm also new to the West Wing camp. I got the DVD set for Christmas, and I'm the one that lent it to Libya, so this is pretty much all my fault.
Way to take credit.
I'm Peter, also Los Angeles, and actually I got into West Wing in a weird way. I watched season 6 and 7 first because it was during the Obama, Hillary, McCain, was before the primaries?
Hillary and Obama were the primaries.
Right, so I got into the show because my wife, Julia, who's here, wanted to rewatch it, and I hadn't seen it. So I actually watched 6 and 7, and then 1 through 5. So I have kind of a weird point of view, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, that would be, I think you're very different from me, because I'm one of those crazy people who insists on watching shows from the beginning, because I don't jump into shows. I'm like, if you're going to convince me to watch a show, give me season one.
Yeah.
So, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to take it season by season and look at the arcs and look at the impact of the show on each of us individually, and I guess how we think about how it talked about politics of the time and how it talks about politics of today. We'll try not to get too deep because I don't know if we're actually the crowd for that. But starting with season one, the main thrust of season one was the first year of office and basically these guys not really knowing exactly what they're doing and trying to figure it out as they go. And one of the things that I actually liked is season one, especially, was very funny. I used to call the cast, except for, like, there was an episode where the president wasn't there, and they're all doing their jobs, and they're all bungling it left and right, and I was calling them the Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I was like, you guys are professionals, right? Like, this is your job, and they were just all over the place. But, I mean, that's what made me fall in love with these characters. So, people jump in.
For me, part of the thing that I loved, or I really responded to in the first season, was this luxury of watching very, very smart characters do their jobs and being passionate about trying to do a good job. And whether or not they succeeded, that was beside the point. You never got the feeling that anyone was just phoning it in, or maybe I'll call out sick today and go see a Dodger game, or whatever else that normal people may or may not feel about their own workplace. Which is a little bit of a TV fantasy, because, quite frankly, I'm sure there are people in politics that don't love every day of their job.
That's true.
I was actually working in Washington, D.C. when the show first started, and I was working in politics and campaigning at the time. So it was so nice to kind of see, you know, this world that I was working in, you know, 9 to 5, reflected on screen, like the best part of what we want for government, the people, kinds of people who you hope are working in, you know, as your public servants. It was really, really interesting and, you know, affirming to watch week in and week out.
I have to say, after watching the show, it's made me want to get into politics. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Season one was a great introduction. I had never seen a show like this before. Never seen a show of this breadth, this scope, with these kind of intelligent characters. And I absolutely loved it. I fell in love with just about every one of them except Mandy. But she disappears into what's properly known as the Mandy Vortex.
Mandy was based on my boss, Mandy Grunwald.
Really?
Who worked for Clinton, and when
she
I worked
was
for her...
She was an awful, awful character.
I was in the room when she was on the phone with Dee Dee Myers going, and did you have to name that character Mandy? So, I like to joke that the assistant that she has in the pilot is me. Although, it's not, of course, but that's my
own funny
joke.
But, yeah, that's the one thing that brought season one down a little bit for me was Mandy, but they totally, she like slowly disappeared as the season went on. I mean, they never speak of her again.
Well, what's interesting to me about that is that Mandy just had, it was, the thing about her character is the actress had this irritating voice.
Oh,
where
Kelly,
when she
yes.
was yelling,
yeah.
like whenever she's yelling at somebody about whatever, first of all, I didn't like her politics, which I think you're not supposed to, but they made her in such a grating character that just the sound of her voice was like...
I can never connect with her. I never found her believable at all.
No. And Ainsley Hayes is basically the replacement for her.
Who
and
I like
she,
a lot.
Oh, I like her.
And
yeah.
she's
yeah.
total...
Yeah.
Right.
Ainsley
she's
Hayes
a complete Republican, and I like her.
Yeah.
All right. Actually, I liked a lot about first season of West Wing was that they didn't do what a lot of either shows or movies would do, which would be to actually start with... how he gets elected. Because he's already president when the show starts.
Yeah, he's been president for a year.
For
a
year.
Cool, yeah.
So that was really good because I'm like, okay, so these people already kind of, we don't know them, but the people already kind of know each other and we're just kind of, you know, fly on the wall. And I don't remember if this is the first Aaron Sorkin, because Aaron Sorkin has a show,
Sports Night.
Which I've never seen. So I don't know if...
It's nowhere near as good.
But then
I heard
did,
it's pretty good.
He also
very
did
good.
Studio 60. He did that one. Which, like,
he did that after, good. Yeah.
But one of the things I really liked about the style of the show is I always like, and it gets kind of parodied when you're doing like an Aaron Sorkin thing,
the walking the hallways, the walk and talk.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like that about the Sorkin show.
And they also do one long shot. And though it gets to be a little ridiculous, like I was actually just watching an episode in season four where they're doing the walk and talk. And it's acts for no particular reason. It's like the other characters are lurking behind a door so that like two people will have a conversation and then one person will walk off and then this person keeps going and then another character will just kind of come into the hallway. And then you're like, were you standing behind the door the whole time? Like some of that gets to be a little ridiculous, but you kind of don't care.
Most of the time it works. There are a couple times.
They even parody that amongst themselves later on when they do the flashbacks to when they first moved into the West Wing where... they're walking through and can't find their offices.
Yeah.
Because they can't know where anything is. So they're making fun of themselves at that point.
Right. I remember that. That was pretty good. It's like, I guess we're going to be having all our meetings walking through the halls.
Wanted to say that, as I recall, in the very first episode in the pilot, do we not meet Martin Sheen till near the end?
You meet him like the last 30 seconds.
Well, the show was originally not supposed to be about him at all.
Right.
It's supposed to be about those other characters, but... Martin Sheen loved it. Everyone else loved him hanging around, so they rewrote the contract so they could bring him back. Because
his introduction is, as I recall,
it's pretty brilliant.
Because
it's
the scene where I want to say it's like a Christian right-wing person, and then he kind of comes in and he completely knows the Bible and he knows all this stuff, and he turns it on her, and you're just like, "Whoa, who the hell's this guy? Oh, he's the president!" It's like, but that's a great, like, it just brings the whole thing together.
You're like,
oh
damn!
Yeah.
Martin Sheen gets to walk in with the best opening line for a character in history. I am the Lord thy God, and thou shalt have no other gods before. That's the first line you have in this show.
That's right.
I came in late to the show because I didn't watch it from the very beginning. I started catching up with it with In Excelsis Deo, the Christmas episode, where Tony's coat is given to a homeless vet who died.
Oh, I remember
that
episode.
Yeah.
And to come into it something like that, you realize that this show is going to be something overwhelming no matter what happens.
Special.
It's going to be an incredibly well-written show. It's well-acted. And you want to follow through from there. So I was on a learning curve moving from the middle of the season on.
Well, I have to say, I watched the very first episode, and my issue was I hadn't seen a show like this because I think I called one of you guys, and I was saying I was watching the pilot, and I felt like I couldn't keep, I felt like I was running, and I couldn't keep up. I was like, what? Who
on a breakneck pace.
They talk so fast.
Captions help.
Yes.
Well, okay, that's all good now to know, but I was watching the pilot on my own going, what? Like, who are they? Because I didn't know.
It takes a bit to get used to that.
I didn't know who the people were. I didn't know what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, well, the first bit, when they all go, I work for POTUS or whatever, blah, blah, blah. because I've watched 24 already, I knew who POTUS was. So that wasn't like, it's supposed to be like, because I think they're probably the first show that used POTUS.
Mm.
So it was supposed to be like, who the heck is POTUS? But I was like, it's president. Why are you guys being all coy about it? So I was all snarky. I thought I was like, oh, this show is kind of slow. I already know this. But I swear this, because that was all like everybody was on their own. But then once they all come together and they're working, then I was like, what? And they're using huge words. So your brain needs like a second to go, okay, all right. And they're talking about what? All right. But yeah, after the first, like once I got to like the third or fourth episode, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not used to shows. Shows normally dumb down their dialogue, they dumb down the concept. Yeah. They over-explain stuff. Though I have to say the second time I watched, when I got to some stuff in first season, there's this moment where Leo asks Josh something. I was like, there's no way Leo didn't know that. You know, it was like, he asked the question for the audience.
They do have moments like that. There's one, I don't remember what season, it's either one or two, where CJ's like, I don't understand the census. And you're like, oh, come on now.
I totally believe that CJ didn't know.
But it was kind of like, you know they're doing that.
Yeah, I know, but it was so cute.
Yeah, it felt like a PSA. It really did. But I have to say, if we're talking about first season and CJ, one of the things I miss from first and second season, not only do I miss the humor, but I also miss just the little character moments. Like, in that episode, Sam and Toby and Josh are like, he's like, can't talk to me, I'm in my moment of jubilee. It's like, I'm having my moment of jubilee, and I was like, what? And it's their whole, they got somebody confirmed, Mendoza confirmed,
yeah.
So they were having their moment of jubilee, and they're like, no one will bother my moment of jubilee. And he's like, what are these guys talking about? And then they're like, CJ's doing the jackal. And that whole scene is so fantastic.
You texted me.
And I was like, CJ's doing the jackal. And I was like, because at first I was like, what the heck? They're like, CJ's doing the jackal. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what?
But then when you see it, And then I love the whole, I think it's Josh comes over to talk to Toby, and Toby's totally in just watching CJ.
Like, don't talk to me.
He's like, you trying to talk to me while CJ is in the jackal? No, we won't have that. And then they all just kind of relax and get into the jackal. You know, they get the head bopping going.
Well, that's, for me, again, something that I really loved about season one, and then some of the subsequent seasons, is that I liked the way the show let me see a group of people that worked very, very hard together. Some of them were genuinely friends outside of being coworkers. And yet, when they were under high-pressure working conditions, they were not above snapping at one another in very vicious, understandable, relatable ways.
Right.
But the one relationship that, to me, always felt established and loving and supportive was one of Leo and the president.
That was the longest one on the show, pretty much.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, from the very beginning, Leo and the president were always, you never questioned how close or how much one relied upon the other. And you really understood in later seasons why Mrs. Bartlett felt almost a jealousy of, where is my place? You know, where is my partner?
Yeah. Between these two guys.
Right.
She can't get
intimacy level. And it, quite frankly, in a very rightful way.
You know?
Because not everyone has marriage like that.
Right. And that's more of a character part. We'll come back to that. But I have to say the one line that we're talking about, Leo and the president, is they got into a disagreement and they were in the situation room and they started to disagree about something. He goes, now, honey, not in front of the kids.
Yeah.
And Leo just kind of goes like, okay. So, yes, they have a really good relationship.
One last thing I'll say I loved about season one, Lisa Edelstein. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, the hooker.
The hooker school girlfriend of Sam.
I forgot about her.
Yes.
Yeah. Yummy.
Sam loses, I mean, every one
Sam
of the characters.
Sam loses his goddamn mind.
Well, the thing is, every single one of those characters, which we'll get back to in more detail, has a flaw, and Sam's flaw is naivete. Like, he was like, well, people will be able to understand that I just like her because we're friends. I was like, you live in D.C. Like, are you kidding me? And everybody tried to explain that to him, and he's like, I don't understand why people just wouldn't just accept that. And it was, no. But anyway, okay, season two was actually dealt with the aftermath of the finale of season one, which was Rosalind.
Right.
Probably two of the best episodes ever on network TV, In the Shadow of Two Gunmen, Parts 1 and 2.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it's not only going forward, it's also going back to the beginning.
Right.
At the same time.
Those are the fantastic flashbacks. Yeah. Yeah. We actually see how everybody met. We see which people knew each other first, and it's like, did you guess that these two people already knew each other? Like, I mean, Leo and the president, everyone knew they'd known each other forever, but I didn't know that CJ and Toby were best friends, you know, before.
I do love how when you go to flashbacks, you see CJ flashback hair.
Her hair is mysteriously curly.
Yeah, like every flashback is a little bit different. It's curly, it's wavy, it's...
Yeah, so I just CJ had a good backstory. I liked her backstory, and I have to say the whole Sam and Josh flashback, because of I liked it in the first place. And he's like, you know, you can tell on my face if we found my guy, and he just comes there and just points at his face. I was like, that was brilliant, but I also liked at the end that they did the same scene. So,
what's nice about that episode is that the entire series, besides being about politics, is about character.
Right.
And these characters are a wonderful team together. But when they're apart beforehand, you see they are not happy. They're not fulfilled.
Right.
Toby even admits, you know, he's a political consultant. He's never won an election before.
Right.
You know, like he's an alcoholic. He's drunk when we first meet him.
Yeah.
He's about to get fired from the Bartlett campaign.
Right,
you know?
But Toby's, I mean, for... I'll say it. It's not really an option for Toby to be happy. Either within the confines of the Bartlett administration, or
in
another kind of job,
right?
Well, I mean, there's some arguments later on in the series. Should Leo have the job that he has for health reasons? Should the president, for health reasons, have that kind of high stress job? You take Toby out of the Bartlett administration, he's still a miserable human being.
Yeah.
Like, there's no.
No, you're right.
But he's happier with the stress. He loves it.
He
loves exercising his intellect, because I'd say the only person smarter than him is maybe Bartlett. I don't think anybody else is smarter than him.
I think Bartlett sees more the end game than Toby does.
Yes, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Bartlett wins in the intellectual...
Toby was the only one who independently figured out that something
was
wrong with Bartlett.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
Toby was
17 people. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're jumping ahead. We're in season two.
Okay, but anyways, basically going back to that, what I love is the fact that, you know, these people are basically dysfunctional and happy before, and once they come together, they form a family.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
exactly.
And that's what's the most important part.
My favorite episode of the whole show is in season two, Noelle.
Ah,
with Josh and Alan Arkin,
the
psychiatrist. Oh, my God. Every time I watch that episode, I tear up. I get chills.
Yo-Yo Ma rocks.
That's right.
Because she was like, I need tickets to get into that.
I need tickets to Yo-Yo Ma. That's
right. But, yeah, that was a really good episode. And what I also liked was Zoe and Charlie.
Oh, that was very cute.
Because that was a very awkward situation where he was kind of like, yeah, I want to date your daughter because she asked me out, boss.
Yeah.
Mr. President.
Yeah, that was a little awkward. But I liked how they dealt with the relationship and everything. And the moment, I don't remember who was it? Was it Abby that told him? One of them, when he goes to visit the president, he finds out that the gunman shot them because of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever it was who told him, I think it was Abby.
I think it was the president.
I thought it was Toby.
No, Toby tells Donna that Josh is shot.
Yes.
Oh.
I think it was the president that told him.
But, I mean, it was somebody who told... I think somebody else threw a comment out that made it more harsh than I felt it should have been in that situation. I was like, man, hit him with a stick.
They said they weren't shooting at me. Or they weren't shooting at the president.
Yeah.
There's no good way to break that.
Yeah.
And he was just like, okay then, I'll just... be outside. He was just totally like in his head at that
Charlie.
Point.
Yeah.
Wait, is Charlie's back? Is his mom dead?
Yes.
Yes. His mom was
a
cop.
DC cop who
was
shot in the line of duty.
Right.
And he's taking care of his little sister.
That's the part that makes me tear up when they bring him in and he's like, my mom was shot.
Oh.
I mean, at the very first.
Yeah.
First
and he was like, I'm interviewing. No, I want to be a runner. I was like,
a
messenger.
Like, no, we're running you in this job.
And he's like,
we
no.
We want you to be personal attaché to the president. Why? Is the messenger job filled?
And I also think that as long as we're talking about casting and what's in on the seasons, I think this is a great opportunity to talk about the quality of the actors, which is fantastic, and the very real possibility of watching people grow into certain kinds of roles.
Mm.
I hated Zoe on The West Wing. I thought she was a bad actress, and I adore her on Mad Men.
I couldn't agree.
Well, she's great on Mad Men.
I have the absolute inverse reaction to her.
Well, you saw Mad Men first, actually.
I did see Mad Men first, and I absolutely hated her on Mad Men. And that's she's actually part of the reason why I stopped watching the show. I can't stand her.
As an actress or as a character?
As that character. I couldn't stand that character. Really, really hated her.
I did not recognize her.
I didn't realize it was the same person either. Until Peter was like, God. Because I was like, oh, I like Zoe. He's like, you do realize she's the character from Mad Men.
You hate.
And I was like, now you've ruined the show for me. So now every time I see her, I'm like, it's a character.
See, it's weird because I would agree with Julia and I think Lisa.
Yeah,
I think she's much more awkward as an actress in West Wing. Like, she just doesn't quite, especially because you're comparing her to all the other actors that I think are really
strong. She's Martin Sheen. I'm not saying that at all.
She does seem a little out of place, but I liked her character.
She's supposed to be 15, really young. 15,
yeah.
She's supposed to be young, so
that's
it's fine.
True.
If I can't judge during a podcast.
To be fair, I think it's a thankless role.
It's true.
She does get crapped upon a lot.
Yeah,
right.
Like, she doesn't get to do a lot. She doesn't get quite the character arc.
She is the first daughter we see.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Thankless
role. Yeah, it is.
And she gets the cheesiest cliffhanger. Is that season two or three? I don't
know.
Right.
That wasn't a cheesy.
Four.
I like
four?
That.
That's
yeah,
four.
That was a good cheese.
I thought that was kind of cheesy.
I like that cliffhanger.
We'll get to that later.
We'll
get to that.
We're jumping ahead.
I guess moving on to season three now.
No. Well, season two, what was the end of season two?
Mrs. Landingham dies.
Two cathedrals.
Oh,
which had,
break my heart.
Dude, who the heck has the audacity to yell at God in Latin?
Jeff Bartlett.
I was like,
God
I was like, you've got to be kidding me. He starts cussing out God, and I was like, okay. And then he switches to Latin, and I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying, but
and
you sound angry.
In the freaking church.
Yeah, and puts it out.
She died in a car accident.
Yes.
And it was
yeah.
a new car.
A brand new car.
Oh,
and it was like a drunk driver hit her, and the drunk driver survived,
fine,
and then
she was
dead.
That season was also the revelation of the MS. MS was revealed at that point. Because for the public. Because they said, are you still going to run? He said, you bet, and I'm going to win. That's where it ends.
No. Don't we find out in one? Because when he gets the flu, and...
That's when we find out in one, but it's revealed to the public.
He's right. It gets revealed...
Oh, we're not the public.
Yes, in the finale, because he's supposed to give a press conference, but then Ms. Landingham dies, and it throws them off their game.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to do the funeral, and then right after the funeral, he has to do the press conference and talk about his MS, and they don't think he's going to run again.
And that's all he does is put his hands
in
his pocket.
I love that,
yeah, and you're all like, oh, on
and I like how Leo was like, watch this.
Leo
knew.
Bartlett comes soaking wet out of the rain, looking like King Lear, and just delivers his thing.
Wait,
I'm going to win this.
No, he actually doesn't do the speech at all.
The speech is
the premiere of the next season.
Yeah,
he stands there and he puts his hands in his pocket.
And that's where the season ends, and you're like, ooh.
Wait, when
did
we get to... Oh, wait, sorry, Julie.
Then I'm going to be the lonely party of one. While I really like the show, I find it sometimes a little too high and too low in parts, and I felt the melodrama was dialed up way too high with the rain and the funeral and the hands in the pocket, and I felt it was overboard.
I think
fair.
The rain, you might be right, but I think the hands in the pocket's pretty good. I like the hands in the pocket.
I
agree.
Fair.
The rain and that,
fair.
It's a little over the top.
Totally
but.
Yeah, because it's like, they said it was a baptism.
It's almost, yes, it's almost
they were
religious.
Going, yeah,
no,
they were
like
going
a,
for that.
Wait, is this the same? Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa.
No, that's good. I had never thought of it as a baptism.
I didn't either.
I watched the special. I watched the special where Sorkin was like, it was a baptism. And I was like, oh, it's a baptism.
I haven't even watched all those.
Is this the same time when you and I were just talking about this, where it's during the whole re-election where Sheen talks to that guy who's like, crime, what do you do?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, let me
talk.
That's
season
three.
Season two, he decides to run again?
Yes.
Yeah. And then season three, it's kind of the build-up toward the
re-election. Because, yeah.
And that's when we meet, is it Brolin?
Yes, James Brolin.
James Brolin, right,
on
okay.
The wrong season.
Crap,
okay.
Hell of a thing.
So that was the end of season two. Little melodramatic, this is true, but like I said, they were going for the big themes, and I did go and look up the Latin to find out what the heck he said, because I was like...
What does he say?
Where did you find a...
I just Googled it.
You
literally Googled...
You never Googled it?
Jeez, where have you been?
What the hell?
I looked up Latin. I literally went West Wing Latin, and it was the first thing that came up.
Nice.
I'm sure.
And it was the they give you the translation of every time Martin Sheen has done a big Latin something, and then they tell you what he said. And he was, the reason that they have him speak in Latin is he is literally cussing out God. And to get it past the censors, they had to do it in Latin.
Kind of like the Chinese on Firefly.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you read that translation, you're going to be like, whoa, why is he not struck by lightning?
I read this now. You know? I totally have to read this now.
So, yeah, it was pretty good. I didn't think to have it with me.
It's something like, you know, I've been your servant on Earth, and you do this to me to, you know, heck with you.
He actually curses God to hell.
Damn.
In the speech.
Damn.
So that is why it was in Latin. It was pretty harsh. And Martin Sheen talked about it, that he's like, I had to give this really deep speech in a language that I don't speak and have to pretend that I speak it. So, big piece of trivia. You know how he puts on his coat and it's all like...
because he's had an injury.
Right. Now that I know it, I totally am looking for it.
Wait, back up.
You know how he puts on his coat and he does it like in a weird way?
Yeah, he does.
He puts it on like a cape.
He puts it on like a cape.
He swivels it off.
The reason is, as a baby when he was born, they broke his left arm as a child. And so he didn't have use of his left arm. And he could only lift it up to a certain angle. And so that's what he can't put his coat on like normal. He literally can't do it. Like normal
why
people.
He was doing
it does
that.
Always look weird. I never thought that.
And he said he's like, that's the only way I can put a coat on.
Yeah, I didn't notice it that much until I saw that. And
I saw
I
the
can't
flare.
Miss it now.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is I always thought it was a cool little character flare. I thought that was pretty, I was like, that's pretty awesome. I love the way he puts on a coat.
He made it a character flare because he doesn't do it anywhere else except West Wing.
He really doesn't?
You look at any other movie, he doesn't do it that way.
Oh.
Well, because it's probably too flashy. Because you don't want... I mean, most people, when they make a movie or a play, you don't want the character... You don't want everyone watching the character put on a coat. Right. Watch that guy put on a coat all day long, you know?
Well, the show, when you have more time... Yeah,
right. Yeah, and he's just said that's the way he actually...
Yeah,
you watch
him
in real life, that's the way he puts on his coat. But if you watch the show now and you realize that he doesn't have full movement of his left arm, you'll see him compensating for it. He'll do little things and he'll just have his arm like right here. And now that I'm watching for it, I totally see it. It's it's interesting. But anyway, moving on to season 3, which
Special
was
Agent Sunshine.
don't say that. We're not at the end yet.
I know, but that's the one thing that sticks out for me so much with season 3.
But MS was the big thing of season 3, and so season 3 goes from being the show was all light and funny. Season 3 is where the darkness comes in and it starts to be...
He lied to the public. And
they just get beat up.
Yeah.
Season 3, they just get really beaten up and they got black eyes all over the place.
For episodes, they're dealing with that. Yeah,
but I do like that episode where Leo takes the whole staff and he's like, you know, we're going to give it 110%. He's like, I don't just want us walking into walls. I want us running into walls. And then there's the episode in season 3 where Sam... through his naivety, messes up. I mean, it's huge.
That might be my favorite episode.
That was a real...
The Black Vera Wang. That's the one where they get the tape of the spot, and I was working in political advertising at the time, so I know about the type of security, about spots and spots just showing up out of nowhere, an Oppo ad. That's weird. And he's like, oh no, I can talk to my friend about this.
And
like,
there's
no
friends in politics.
And then it ends up on, you know, free media, which let me tell you is the holy grail for political advertising, which was, you know, exactly
it's free.
What they were trying to warn him off of. But also to speak
to
your point about the darkness, isn't season 3 also when they start introducing the storylines about Kumar?
Yes.
Which is the only thing about West Wing that kind of weighed it down a little bit for me.
It was a little preachy.
That went on for a while.
But I liked CJ's reaction to the whole Kumar thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that they insinuated that she wouldn't do her job because she was upset about it. Her thing is, I'm going to do my job. I can still talk smack about it and give my opinion about why I don't like this job. Or I don't like what you're doing or this policy. And I like the fact that the president, like, when he makes his decision, he's like, so who's going to tell CJ? He's like, I don't want to tell CJ. And he's like, is CJ going to be mad? And Toby's like, oh, no, she's totally cool. And then Toby gets beat up because he's the one that comes to talk to CJ, and CJ just totally lays in. She lays in on everyone. for that whole episode, which is great. And then, but at the end of the day, when it's time to give her press conference, she does her job. You know?
Wait, when's the what's the one where she can't give the press conference and
oh, with her teeth?
I had a wookie.
That's awesome.
What is it? I heard you. I just wanted to hear you say it again.
I think it was like second season.
And
that
Toby's
was early.
Was that second season?
Yeah, but that was when
Josh gives it.
Celestial Navigation, I think. It's
season
two.
One.
Yeah, season
oh,
two.
I love
yeah.
season.
Yeah.
That's season
Toby.
One.
Oh,
season
one.
That's where Toby
and Sam
have
to
go
get
Mendoza out of jail.
Oh, that's my favorite episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Season one.
And that was when the president also said, and he was like, "I don't care if you have a gapping, bleeding head wound,
you
will always."
Get
yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, so that stuff is funny.
Yeah.
But yeah,
the funniest part about that is Josh doing press conference.
Oh God.
And the president's like, and you're not only do I have a secret plan, but you're against it. Handle the sophomoric, you know, stylings of the White House.
You've been mollycoddling the press.
They take him to lunch, man. That is just.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, that's right. Danny's even telling, "You sure you want to do this? You sure you want to do this, John? You sure you don't want to cancel it and have someone else do it?"
One of the best and certainly most consistent. You know, everybody, all the characters have their foibles, but watching Josh and his arrogance just go walking right into some crazy situation
it's wonderful.
That
it's
you're
wonderful.
Just like, oh my
God, oh
God, he's doing it again. That was
well,
the most consistent form of comic relief.
No.
Right.
Know?
But back to, were you going back to season three?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Back to season three. You talk about Kumar being a big thing in there. You have to remember one thing that season three started with. Season three came out in 2001.
That was
9/11.
Right.
The opening episode,
that
episode of that season,
yeah.
of that season
that
was that standalone episode where everyone was trapped in the White House because of a supposed terrorist
That's
identification.
Right.
And they talked to the kids
racism.
Who were trapped there.
It
was a standalone outside of the regular story arcs.
Right.
But everything after that in TV and movies and in life is influenced by what happened on September 11th.
Right.
True.
Which
That's
is why
right.
you get
yeah.
that Kumar
Although
story.
Although I understand why it's there, and I think it certainly makes sense considering, you know, the way world events were playing at the time. It just felt a little bit overlong, a little bit over heavy, a little like they didn't quite have the right, I don't know, spice mix in it, you know? You know, and that's just me. It's a show that I think was, like, perfectly on the mark. The rest of the time, but just like the Kumar thing, what are we going to do with this guy? And Sharif, it just weighed it down.
Oh, the Sharif storyline.
Yeah,
yeah, the assassin.
That was the one where they assassination.
Assassination.
Yeah.
That was an interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That was an interesting
was,
plug
I
because
like
you have a president who, for the most part, you think of as a very good person and morally upright, and he has to make this decision to assassinate a public official, basically, and that.
It's posse comitatus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice.
That weighed on him.
Yeah, that was a really interesting thing because you're not really sure which side to be on or how to think about it or, you know, because he's breaking the law. That's
yeah.
the thing. And you understand what he's trying to do, but he's breaking, like, every law to do it, so should he do it? You know what I mean? So all of that was kind of really interesting, and they played all the sides of it. And I'm actually glad that they didn't come out and admit, because he was toying with the idea of admitting to it and trying to figure out what he would do. I was like, dude,
well,
you just did. He did feel guilty.
He felt awfully guilty, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, plus some of the stuff that happens at the end of that season plays off into season four with,
right.
with Kumar and the Sharif and,
yeah.
Yeah, because,
and Israel as
right,
well.
Right, and that all like comes together. One thing I did notice, though, is that's the season three when they start dealing with the Middle East and all of that. That's actually, well, that's kind of a character thing, where Leo actually starts to become, I start disagreeing more with
he
Leo.
He becomes a little harder.
He
yeah.
becomes more prejudiced.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't like that, but anyway.
If I'm going to go back maybe 5 seconds and talk again about the Kumar, the assassination, and kind of talking about breaking the law. This is, again, one of my gentle disappointments with the show. When the characters on my television screen were talking about, you know, should we assassinate the sitting head of a nation? Do we have that power? To me, it really brought back to mind the scene in The Godfather, or The Godfather 2, with Michael Corleone, who is Al Pacino, and Diane Keaton, Kay. And Kay is trying to talk to Michael and say, you know, Michael Corleone's point is that, you know, my father is powerful like a senator. And Kay's point is, well, senators don't have people killed. And Michael's, who's being naive now?
Right.
You know, just this idea that these people were that far along into their political careers, having that kind of power, and really grasping this idea of what are you, you know, where do you feel that your nationalism and your patriotism and, quite frankly, your career ambitions, where are the scope of your power? How far are you willing to use that?
Right.
Because there's no way that you're a sitting politician with an election ahead of you thinking, I could have a really big win right here. How is that going to play? You know what I mean? Like, if I can topple a terrorist organization and all of a sudden everything magically works my way, you know, and no one has to know that I sent in the SEALs or whatever desert. Mm.
That leads to a very slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, but basically we ended up living that for the next, you know, 6 years after that.
Yeah.
Right.
So. And I think it was commentary on some of that. Like, I'm sure they were sure the Bush sanctioned murders and assassinations, and that was kind of like the commentary about it on how you would come to that decision. So I thought it was deep and interesting, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. And good show is when they make you think about
consequences
and where the moral line is. So,
although I will say that even though I agree with what you're saying, I do like not knowing how I necessarily feel about what a character does. Like, if I hate it, I love it. Like, I do like that, especially if a show can do that. I will say, though, that I guess it's the Kumar, the assassination plot, to me, it was actually political, I mean, it was very socially relevant. The thing I really like about West Wing, you had brought up 24 earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I like 24. I think 24 is a fun show also. But what I actually like the most about West Wing isn't when they deal with huge things like that, like we're going to kill somebody or someone's kidnapped. It's really more that you have these really smart people working together. They're really trying to do the best job they can, and it's really not really do I murder somebody or blow something up. It's really more just like, we got to get this bill passed, and like, who are we going to talk to? That's the stuff I really love about the show.
That's true.
Because
I
feel like that's probably more the day-to-day life,
right,
of politics and stuff.
And also, you have to remember, when they come to those decisions, the only people in that room are usually Fitzwallace, the president,
right,
and Leo. So mm-hmm. you don't have the rest of your cast making those decisions. But, you know. So season 3 ends.
Breaks my heart.
Remembering. This is Mark Harmon.
Yeah.
The episode
Agent
that actually
Sunshine.
That
Agent
actually
Special Agent Sunshine. That's right.
He was great.
He was
it
wonderful.
Actually launched his career into NCIS. He got the NCIS role because
Now, do listeners know? Have you talked about your love for NCIS?
I have talked about my love for NCIS and my love for Mark Harmon.
Okay.
All right.
So make sure that's full disclosure.
Just watching, you know, CJ crumble while they play that wonderful song Hallelujah just totally broke my heart. I was bawling with her.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing about it that, I mean, I love the way that their relationship developed, you know, in season 3. And she doesn't want security, and then she has security. She doesn't like, you know, he's all claustrophobic, but then she's like, he's kind of cute.
Yeah.
What's great is I love the whole shooting range scene. One I like is the fact that CJ's all, I can fire a gun. I've watched it on television. How hard could it be? And she knocks herself out. And then he's trying to show off. And after she leaves, he's like, oh, she said I'm tall. And so he like flips the gun and almost burns himself.
Yeah.
I mean, all that was, you know, all that's really great, really good character stuff. And they spend all this time to have us get to know this guy. And then I feel like it's cheap because then they just randomly have him killed in a liquor store. I was like...
Mm.
I mean, granted, they're trying to show that this stuff realistically happens and all that, but I was I felt like, you know, because I'm watching television, I felt he deserved a better death.
Well, it starts to get into a rut, too, at that point, because at the end of the first season, you have an assassination attempt. At the end of the second season, Mrs. Lanningham's killed in a car crash. At the end of the third season, Mark Harmon shot
right
in the bodega. People are dying, and then Sharif's killed at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This counterpoint of, you know, a man being killed for what is, quote-unquote, a just reason, and then a man being killed for a senseless reason at the same time.
Right. While everyone is watching...
You're good with the symbolism.
I don't know. I'm a writer. I can't help it.
I've never thought of it.
They were doing all that juxtaposition because you're watching the play, because you're watching the play and what the play is about. You have everybody watching that, and then that's the scene where the president talks to James Brolin. James Brolin. Well, and he's like, crime, huh? What are you going to do? Boy. Yeah. Well, and I was like, oh. And he goes, you know, in the future, when you wonder why I beat you, it was because of this moment.
Crime. What are you going to do?
And that was the best
totally
line.
George Bush, too, that guy. He was
He was supposed to be.
Yeah.
From Texas, an idiot. And
No, he was from Florida.
He was in Florida.
Oh, right.
Still, an idiot.
So he's Jeb Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
But still.
It makes me want to see the Red Mask one of these days.
I don't know what that is.
That's the thing that they see. It's called the Red Mask.
Oh, I totally want to see that.
No. They're seeing the War of the Roses.
War of the Roses.
Oh, my bad. Red Mask.
Which doesn't exist.
Oh, they totally made that up?
I looked it up because I thought it would be a great thing to see or direct at one point. And I went, and they took all these different pieces, supposedly, from the Shakespearean War of the Roses sagas, put them all together into one long piece.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
Why did you tell me that?
Is a real song, and the refrain keeps playing over and over. What is victorious in war shall be made glorious in peace. And that's the haunting thing that's being sung over and over again, like an English victory song, while Bartlett has signed a man's death.
Right, and he said that that song reminds him of college and a victory, and like after a big football game or whatever. But that was, yeah, that was really good. So I think that the finale of season 3 was good, except for my anger at Mark Harmon's untimely demise.
Speaking of Mark Harmon's untimely demise, the things in this episode that I really, really loved, and in general will always respond to, is one character nakedly showing their ambition, which would be President Bartlett saying that he really wanted to get reelected in this vicious, personal way. Mm. And I love it when I see smart people...
when they were
really,
having that conversation? Yeah.
Really, really wanting something. Because you don't get to see that a lot on television. And then, as far as I'm concerned, there's certain signs that if I'm watching something, I'm watching bad entertainment. Usually, it's Andy Garcia or Kate Hudson. However, if there's a death scene and the person falls and there's also falling flowers that hit the floor, the odds are you're watching something of poor quality, and that was Mark Harmon. I think he had the flower in his hand as he died.
He knocks him off.
Because
he was trying to buy a flower for CJ.
He's on a Snickers bar, too.
Yes.
Was it slow motion, too?
Yeah. No, was it slow motion?
Yeah, it makes me... The guy's running out the door.
Well, I actually, the second time I fast-forwarded because I was like, I can't watch this.
I'm still back on There's No War of the Roses.
She was so looking forward to seeing it, right?
Season 4.
Wait, why did you say Red Mask before instead of War of the
Roses? I got him confused. Red Mask is the mask that they hold for the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And it's another episode that they have around that time. It's like a couple episodes earlier because it was the Big Brother,
the guy in the Big Brother program was like saying that it was a mixture of state and church and you can't mix them, and why is the Senate going to church? That was Red Mask.
Yeah.
But season 4 was about...
I love the first episode.
It was basically about the actual re-election campaign. Now that he's got the whole MS out there, we've got the two primary guys. You've got the head of the Democrats, the head of the Republicans, and now they're actually doing war on each other.
But the first episode where Josh and Toby and Donna just...
Get stuck.
That's the greatest
one.
That is really good.
Amy Adams is in that.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I love when Toby loses it.
And he starts beating
him. Can't we find civilization?
That was great because it's like, yeah, you're in a totally different time zone now.
Oh, is that the one where they have the bets? Where they're you have to say, I work for the office
of the
president.
Every time you say your name.
Right.
But that was great because, well, the thing that actually is funny is because they're rushing to catch the plane and they're showing CJ and they're already on the plane. And I was like, why are they showing them already on the plane and they're trying to catch the plane? It's because they already missed it.
They missed it, yeah.
And so you're like, oh.
I don't know if that would
on the plane?
CJ was like, can Josh come to my office? And Josh is like, did you not miss that we missed the plane and we weren't on the plane with you? And she goes, oh, you weren't on the plane?
Would that actually happen? I don't know, but it was a great episode.
And then there's the time zone thing.
Right.
With the train, because the train, right in the next time zone, because they're right on the border, so they missed the train by
now. No, it wasn't.
And
they was trying to
go right through a couple of states. And
go through Tennessee.
Maybe Indiana. I don't know. You guys lived in the Midwest.
And then that kid that stopped because he wanted to talk to his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was just really? And he's like, and Josh is like, yeah, they got stopped by some mean girls. I mean, really mean.
You want some trivia?
What's that?
That kid was in Spring Awakening on Broadway and won the Tony Award for Best Supporting Actor.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, for playing Moritz.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah,
look
yeah.
at that.
Yeah, I was watching, I think your favorite, the Noel one, where Toby gives his coat to a homeless veteran. It's the Christmas
That's
episode.
Not Noel.
That's not Noel.
That's In Excelsis Deo.
Thank
first
you.
First season.
And when Toby goes and they're showing him the body, the officer there, Cedric Daniels.
Yes,
he's
from The Wire.
Uh-huh. All these people.
It could even be
okay.
Cedric,
anyway,
considering
anyway,
it's DC.
On.
Yeah.
Maybe I bumped up to Baltimore.
Anyway, okay, so end of season four was...
The kidnapping. Cheesy
kidnapping.
It wasn't cheesy. I was
just...
play that tired Mass Attack song.
No, but what
like,
I really liked
did
is that...
Did anything else happen in season four that we're missing? I can't really remember too much.
Season four was the election. He won
the
election. They had an inauguration.
Oh, the debate was great.
The debate
was great.
Best episodes of that season.
He slammed that guy. It was
he
just like...
ruined him. Yeah, and the guy walks off, he's like... Congratulations! You pretty much won. Yeah,
that had one of the other best openings of the series, where they're doing the debate prep in the West Wing, in the Oval Office, and they're like,
"Oh,
here's the question." And Bartlett's like, "Well, no, I can't say that." Da, da, da. And Toby's freaking out, going, "We have a debate tonight. What the hell is going on here?" And they all lose it. They go, "All right, who said he'd lose it? Give me the $10."
And then Toby got back at Josh by having Josh when Josh went to the election. To cast his vote, he had all those actors asking him questions like, if I mark two names on the ballot, that's...
Yeah.
And he gets confronted by like 10 people, and he's like losing his mind, and then they all show up, and he was like, yeah, Josh, Toby told us
to mess with you.
He's like, I hate him. It's so good. And then Donna actually does do her ballot wrong.
Oh,
and she has
right.
to switch.
Yes.
Christian Slater to
switch with
her.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a,
that's right.
I forgot about Christian Slater.
I forgot
they've
about
that.
That.
Right.
Many people have.
He was like a little love interest for her, and then poof.
Wait, what's the episode where, just because you're making me think of Toby, the one where Toby has to go, and it's basically when people get to lob their complaints. And he hates these kind of people. It's a huge...
Oh,
it's the cheese day.
No. You're talking about when he goes to the environmental protest.
Yeah, but that was
no,
so cheese
I'm
day.
Sorry.
That's
so,
the one where Josh...
And he just, like, brings
CJ.
A newspaper to read and everything.
Yeah. And that's
the
one where Josh...
Did
you see the map people where they...
Yeah.
Have,
oh, that's right!
They want the country's
correct.
Actually,
right.
you know...
As their actual
size.
And the map totally looks
like
weird.
Like, screwed up. Yeah.
And is that when Sam figures out that he knows someone that really was a spy? Like,
Yes.
No, they're all dead. Can't you? Oh, your dad was a spy. It's better for me not to tell you.
No, he only decided. Donna makes him not tell her because he's all mad about his own daddy issues, and he was totally just going to tell her.
Is that the one where she brings? What's her name? Brings out the book when it's all black. When she's like, here's
the
thing I'm going to show you. And
yeah.
That might be my favorite episode.
That's pretty good.
It's really good.
I like Cheese Day.
They had it in season one and season two, and then I dropped out after season four. But so they didn't, at least while I watched it, they didn't have it again, and that was one of my favorite things. Actually,
oh, it's like good. Oh, you're saying you almost wish they would bring that as a yearly.
Yeah,
like
it was supposed
fun.
To be.
It's like a great idea.
It's coming, I don't know if y'all watch House, but the little moments when House is in the clinic are like the funniest moments. And as the show's gone on, they've done it less and less. So it's kind of like that.
Yeah. But anyway, into season four, you guys don't like the kidnapping. I think they established the fact that Zoe's boyfriend was useless. I thought they established
that
pretty well. And I like the campaign that all the guys got together to help Charlie to get Zoe back.
Right.
So they had like two concurrent campaigns going on.
Yeah, that was so cute.
So that was pretty good.
Commentary on that episode, they talk about how they set that up. Like in the first season, when Julie gets her Secret Service agent, he says, "You will have this because the nightmare is not this. The nightmare is me."
And he literally says it word for word.
Yeah,
exactly
what happened.
Lying dead in the alley, and you're gone, and that happened.
It happened word for word.
Exactly,
which
word for word.
Terrifying.
Yeah. And it was. I mean, I liked it because I felt so bad for his Butterfield. He's the head of the Secret Service.
Oh, I loved him.
I felt so. He had the worst job. He was like, okay, now I have to tell the president that his daughter's gone.
25 is the episode for the 25th Amendment.
Yes, because he totally signed. That
and
was
they,
pretty cool.
And they bring John Goodman in.
Yeah,
as president walking.
I really thought that I was gonna hate him, and I really
see. I thought Goodman was good.
Oh, he was.
I was just saying.
I thought I was gonna hate him because they set him up as this big, you know, Republican
guy.
Yeah,
but you gotta remember these are liberals writing Republicans.
Right.
So, I mean,
but I thought that they were gonna be mean because of that. If you have liberals writing Republicans,
but they write them respectfully. They're just very liberal Republicans that they write.
Well, he wasn't really liberal.
Yeah,
John John Goodman wasn't liberal. He just
that's true.
He came off as a good guy.
Yeah, you were like a liberal Republican. He gets
Alan Alda.
Alan Alda.
He's what you're talking about. Yeah. He becomes liberal. I mean, he's a Republican. I would vote for.
Right.
That's all that liberal.
Right.
Yeah,
right. But you're a big talk when you're not in the voting booth. In a national election, I mean, if it came down to it, and there's a Democratic, like someone on the national Democratic ticket, and a really nice Republican. I mean, I know.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Right.
But
I like Ainsley Hayes. She's a big Republican.
Ainsley Hayes was great.
She's pretty good. Yeah, but I didn't agree with her politics.
No,
right?
But she was
character. I'm just saying, well-written character.
Yes,
okay, I think,
yes.
Yeah.
All right, season five.
Season four was the cliffhanger,
yeah.
Was Zoe gets kidnapped. Season
that takes
five,
about 3 episodes.
Yeah, they
take
about 3 hours, because she's gone for maybe a week.
Yeah.
And you have...
Thankfully, it didn't take long.
It didn't take long.
I thought it was just the next episode.
No, it's a couple.
A few episodes.
It's a couple, yeah.
It's a couple.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I like the restraint that... Well,
and then it just
I say restraint that Charlie has, but it's more like actually Josh was physically holding him back than anything else.
Yeah.
So I thought that was all pretty good. But after that arc,
season
then...
Season 5 just goes kind of crapper for a while.
It's what bothered me at the beginning of season 5 is... Josh makes a mistake that I didn't think was that big of a mistake, but I mean, like, all of them have made
mistakes. Refresh us.
I don't actually remember what the mistake is. I just remember that it wasn't really earth-shattering.
Is that when he causes someone to
switch
parties?
I think that's what it is.
He caused somebody to switch parties and it messed up the vote, and so they bring in somebody to replace him doing his job. And I was like, are you kidding me? Josh has been doing his job for like 3-4 years.
But he gets sent to the dugout.
But she wasn't there for very long.
Yeah, but I didn't know that when I started watching it. I was like, I'm watching this going, are you kidding? Like, they sent him out to, they basically sent him to go sit in his office and do nothing.
Yeah.
They're like, we're not taking away your title, but you're not allowed into the meetings anymore.
Right.
You don't have a job to do. We just have this woman doing your job for you. And I was like, what the? And that just made me.
Season 5 was so depressing.
Like you said, it didn't last that long. It was maybe 6 or 7 episodes. And then she goes away.
That season was also where the Republicans started coming back into power. Because
they were already in power.
But after Walken took over the presidency for the week, supposedly, the new Speaker of the House, who was ended up on Desperate Housewives, the actor ended up there, took over, and that's when they had the government shutdown episode. Also a precursor to what happens in reality now, but he comes in and manages to do that stunt that Josh manages to get back into good graces with by having the president walk to them.
That was
fantastic.
That was they were totally unprepared. That was so great about it is they were expecting him to fold, and he's like, I'm not folding. And then Josh was like, well, let's go to them. So then they walk all the way,
way
through Capitol Hill, right? And they were like, they're out the door. What are we going to do? And some of the people were just like, well, let's go out there and talk. And he goes, no. Let's make
a plan.
We need a plan.
Need to know what we want.
So then they actually sit in the room for like a half an hour trying to come up with a plan.
While the
president
sits
wait.
With the press.
Right. And so then they look like idiots and they look unprepared. And then Josh is like, let's leave.
Yeah. That was kind of on the upswing, I think, of season 5. Because it went down
the turning
for a while.
Point.
Yeah.
I think the turning point for me in season 5 was the episode The Supremes.
That was a great episode.
That was the first time I actually laughed out loud at a West Wing episode in like 10 episodes.
Well, that's like 4 episodes from the end, isn't it?
Yeah. But that was, I think, when it started coming back up.
Well,
Glenn Close and that one other actor, they were both like, the one was a Democrat.
Oh, yeah,
that guy,
I forgot that.
Yeah, he's been like everything. He was in Black Hawk Down, Dark Knight. And one was a Democrat and one was a Republican. They loved arguing with each other. You know?
And so they made the deal that it's like, you take the super left guy, get the super right guy.
They both got on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Because originally, I think they just wanted to take someone from the middle of the road.
And then they had
right.
Sesame Street.
The shot of CJ sitting next to Big Bird
was
fantastic.
Genius.
Wait, what is she... Pink, is she the flamingo?
She's flamingo.
She's flamingo.
But I'm sure someone has said that CJ also looks like Big Bird.
She's so tall for crying.
And so they just have them sitting
she's
next to each other on this bench, and it's the most awkward, bizarre,
and
they're just,
thing.
And they're just like
right,
because
it's the, is it,
what?
Was it the first lady was doing something with the
yeah.
Yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
Like that?
Elmo, she was doing a thing with
well,
Elmo.
Like giving
yeah.
a shot.
Yeah,
or
like giving
right.
a shot to get your shot, kid shots and everything. Yeah.
That was a good episode.
Season 5's also... That's a great transition season into the new storylines, like with Donna.
Donna really gets
into
her
fed up. She's not moving any further along in her career or her life, so she basically quits and tries to get a new job.
Yeah,
and that's what leads into the culmination.
What was
of
the end
five.
Of season 5? I don't remember.
Yeah, well, basically, season 5 ends with the episode Gaza, in which Donna has become almost a liaison to a different branch of the government, And she accompanies Fitzwallace on a trip to the Middle East to learn about that.
Sad.
And at the end, basically, there's a an IED bombing, and her Jeep gets blown up.
And Fitzwallace
is killed at that point.
And the thing that's beat up about that is he's retired, and he was supposed to be just chilling out, and the president asked him for favors, like, can you go and babysit these diplomats for me? And also, you say Donna was a different part of the government. She was actually liaison for CJ, because CJ was like, yeah, Josh isn't taking care of you. He should be looking out for you and helping you get promoted. He's not doing it. So here I am. I'm going to help you out. So she let Donna go in place of one of her own assistants to give her some more experience.
Ricky from My So-Called Life.
Is that who she replaced?
Oh, that's
right.
Right.
Yeah.
So then CJ feels guilty for sending Donna, and then the president feels guilty for sending
Fitzwallace.
Which is awful.
Demoting Admiral Fitzwallace to Yeoman Johnson.
Yeah, because he's the guy.
Star Trek.
The red shirt.
And
he's
now you're red shirts.
Two of you go to the strange land. Only one of you are coming back.
It's
Donna's got to come back.
So he's the red shirt.
Shatner goes down.
I get it now. But yeah, so the first few episodes, I think, of season 6, we're dealing with, you know, Donna's recovery and Josh flying out to Germany to...
Josh starting to realize his feelings for her, too.
Yeah.
Well,
I
see,
think he'd known about it for a while, and I think this kind of brought it to
a point. What's interesting about Donna, going off characters for a minute, is that in Shadow 2 Gunman, if you look at the script for it, when Josh gives her the badge, when she fakes her way into his office and says, I'm your new assistant, and I have an old assistant, basically, on their first day on the campaign.
Right.
He finally gives her his ID badge.
Right.
And the stage direction says she tries not to look as though it's the first time anyone's ever given her a piece of jewelry.
Oh.
So that tells you all you need to know about the character right there.
Right.
So now she's outgrown him for what he can do for her at this point, and he has to realize that he can't do anything.
Well, and that's the thing is, it made Josh come off as a jerk. Like, I understand that he doesn't want to lose Donna because he does care about her.
Yeah.
And him having this little bit of power over her is the only way he knows how to keep her there.
Yeah.
He doesn't come from the school of if you really care for somebody, you try to do what's best for them.
Yeah.
And he's not doing that. Because if you look at Charlie and the president is trying to help Charlie in his career and make him a better person.
You need to graduate college.
Right. Yeah, and he's helping Charlie. And Josh is holding Donna back.
Not only that, Josh also admits, you know, he doesn't know how to deal with women. Because when he's dating Mary Louise Parker, the actress of that book, when he's doing that, he says, you know, you were dating my roommate, you know, you were having lots of sex with my roommate, what were you doing? I was preparing for this job.
Right.
He doesn't know how to deal with women, so he can't relate to her at any level.
Well, I mean, he can have one-night stands, but he can't do relationships.
He can't do relationships,
right.
And that's what she's there for.
But I think, as Lisa pointed out earlier, I mean, the show constantly shows you that Josh is kind of a jerk. I mean, he's a successful jerk. He might have the best of intentions some of the time, but he's
like
really
some of the time.
He's really, really arrogant. He really, really wants to win, and quite frankly, he's, you know, this idea that the president and Charlie have a better relationship. Well, I don't think Charlie's trying to get into
the president's
pants.
And if he is, that's very disturbing.
It's the uncut West Wing.
But season 6 had the Israeli-Palestinian thing, I think, for a little while, which actually I thought was pretty cool.
Right.
I like that.
The only thing I have to say about that is that I like the Camp David. What I didn't like or didn't believe is that was a big enough conflict between the president and Leo for the president to fire Leo. I don't buy it. They've been friends for way too long. They've fought a million times over issues just as big or bigger. They've disagreed, and they've managed to keep going with their friendship.
Maybe they're just getting to be grumpier old men.
Is it an escalating series of events that led up to it?
Not really.
Yeah, I think it kind of was.
Not really. It was escalating. It was the exact same argument. It was only escalating in the sense that they were having the same argument over and over again, which is that Leo didn't believe the peace process was possible, and the president was like, well, I'm going to try, and I need you to get on board. And every time they tried to have a conversation about it, Leo would say, well, this is why it's not going to work. And to me, I understand that the president was like, either you agree. The thing that was weird about that is the president was like, either you agree with me or you get out of the room. You don't need advisors who are always going to agree with you. That's not why you have them
there. That's what he has Toby for.
yes. And it doesn't make sense that the president would be so angry at Leo for disagreeing with him. to the point where he fires him. Like, Leo
leaves him to die.
And then leaves him to die in the woods.
I didn't get it all. That was like, well, that wouldn't happen. I mean, it was gripping. It was like, but yeah.
It was just like, I understood. Leo having the heart attack is not unbelievable if you think about all the drinking he's been doing and all the drugs he's been doing. Sure, he has a heart attack.
Yeah.
But no one went looking for him.
No
and
one wondered where
he was. It's a secure base where there's nothing but people for the president, security for the president. How do they not know that one person didn't check out?
Yeah.
And it's freaking Leo.
Yeah,
no, seriously. Leo didn't check out of Camp David. Oh, I wonder where he is. Someone go look for him. You know, that was ridiculous. I didn't believe the fight.
Well, they found him the next day.
Yeah, it took him a day to find him. And he had had a heart attack, which meant he actually should have been dead at
that
point.
He should have been dead, yeah. But
It took him a day to find him in the woods. He's exposed to the elements.
But
it was ridiculous.
And I guess after all that, we jump into the new campaign for the new president.
CJ. It was around the same time.
Oh, CJ
becomes... CJ
becomes
the chief
of
staff, which I actually thought was a really good choice.
Yeah,
and
I didn't believe that would happen, but...
Are we glossing over one of the worst episodes of the series, where the time travel one, where they go back to Cuba with with Leo trying to be
the
younger...
The shadow of Fidel Castro or whatever.
Well, the thing about that episode is you guys warned me about it, and
I forgot about that one.
The thing is, it wasn't as bad as you made it sound when I watched it.
Okay,
mainly,
number one, you're wrong.
Well, first of all, it's not the whole episode. You made me think that the entire episode was this Fidel Castro flashback. It's like 10 minutes. It's really not that long. Because Leo leaves at the beginning of the episode to go down there to talk to Fidel Castro. So, like, the first shot of the episode is he's got the mirrored glasses on.
Yeah,
and it's all the yellow light. And he comes into the room, and you see this shadowed guy that's supposed to be Fidel Castro.
Right, but isn't there also flamenco guitar?
Oh, I'm sure.
To give it that Latin flair?
Like, I'm sure.
That's always in Cuba.
Yeah, but... Yeah, and I'm
anywhere you go,
the only
Cuba.
Music there is in Cuba.
Yeah,
welcome to Cuba. Here's your soundtrack.
But I'm like, I'm sure that's true, but literally they have that scene, and then we're not in Cuba anymore. You're dealing with the president. He's doing his thing. And then at the end, and everybody's like, is Leo in Cuba? Is Leo in Cuba? And they're like, they're denying it all over the place. We don't see what Leo's doing, and then Leo's back. So we literally have, like, one scene. You guys made it seem like it was the whole episode.
Right. Well, when do we see the thing where he meets that female Secret Service agent?
What female Secret
Service agent? The blonde one.
What are you talking about?
Oh, you mean the security advisor?
Security advisor.
Oh,
yeah.
I was like, she's not Secret Service.
He was drinking down in Cuba, and she brought him out.
Yeah, well, we hear about
when she was deep undercover.
That was a flashback. Yeah, but we don't...
Is that a bad episode or another one?
Well, we hear about it, but we don't see her. We don't see her there.
No, we do.
Yeah.
We do?
Yeah, we see her in the flashback later, yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's
deep
later.
Undercover in a bad storyline.
Yeah.
So I guess we were glossing over that because it was a bad episode.
It doesn't really pay off anything.
And also, if we're talking...
It doesn't really do anything.
If we're talking bad episodes...
Well, why are we talking bad episodes? But go ahead.
Well, because the one that I remember... Lisa, I think, is before I even saw West Wing. Isn't there the one where CJ goes back to her
worst
family?
Episode?
Oh, with her dad.
Yeah, that's
yeah, her
dad.
And it was not written by Sorkin.
Her
Alzheimer's. It does not take place in the West
Wing. And it doesn't take place in the West Wing, which is when you're.
And Matthew Modine plays her boyfriend.
Yes, and and never shows up again. Why are we even spending time with these people? We never see her dad again.
Yeah.
We never see the book.
Her father.
We never see
season 6.
No.
We're
kind of jumping all over the place.
Yes, let's continue. We're doing...
I guess season 6 and 7 we can just talk about one.
It's kind of one big thing.
It's the election, which you sadly didn't like, Lydia.
I loved it.
I like the West Wing. I like spending time in the West Wing.
But this
almost
the road to the West Wing.
I don't care about that. Just like we talked about the fact that the show started while he's already in the West Wing for a year.
True.
I like being in the West Wing. If we're going to be out on the road somewhere, I can deal with like an episode or two, but 2 seasons of that? No.
Okay, but now this is where, I mean, I would come in and say that, you know, as I said earlier, I got into the West Wing because Julia thought it would be interesting because she was like, oh, with all that's going on right now with, you know, Bush's second term is ending and, you know, is going to be Obama, McCain. In real life, that's what I was really watching. And obviously on The Daily Show and everything. She's like, oh, we should watch season 6 and 7 of The West Wing because that's kind of what it's about. It's about Jimmy Smits versus Alan Alda. And I hadn't really... I probably had seen an episode of The West Wing, but not really to the extent that I would be this podcast.
Right.
So
Jimmy Smits.
I really liked season 6 and 7 because that was my first really, you know, foray into the world. And so what you're saying, which is that, you know, I really miss not being at the White House. To me, it was all new. So I was just like, wow, this is really interesting. Like, I love how they talk so fast. And
I liked a different perspective because you knew that the current administration was on its way out. So we had to see the possibilities of the new administration. And I liked that transition. I thought
it was too long.
I didn't think it was too long at all. I love the debate that they actually had, which I heard was
live. Live debate.
I didn't like that. I didn't like
what's the guy?
It's in the episode.
I skipped the other one.
Jimmy Smits?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Jimmy Smits, so I thought...
I think he's really good in Dexter, though.
He was decent in Dexter, but in this, it was like, wow, you're cardboard.
Well, yeah, I think Smits in general is a little like...
Cardboardy.
Because he's from L.A. Law, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And he is very much, I'm the good-looking guy who's not,
and
doesn't look super
too.
Layered. And the character of Santos isn't quite really anywhere near as compelling as Alan Alda's
character. More than the actor.
Well, what I was going to say is that Josh is all about Santos saying, okay, I found my guy, meaning that he found the equivalent of Bartlett.
Santos is Bartlett light, if you
yes,
guess.
Yes.
And I like Santos, but he's no Bartlett. No way.
I mean, part of the reason why I liked season 6 and 7 is because I liked watching the primary process.
Yeah,
and
I thought that was great. It was
liked,
cutthroat. Mm-hmm. It was exciting. It was fast paced. It was
all the numbers
kept,
of how many people are going to have,
just,
and
right.
each stage and everything.
Great.
Well, I liked watching the show reinvent itself Sorkin free. I felt like it finally started
to feel
which is
the
problem of
like,
season 5.
Right, a second
you know.
Show.
But it
and
finally
then,
got its stride, and, you know, it brought in Alan Alda, who was
then,
effing fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, I found
that
some of the characters that I... were finally saying some of the things that I had wanted some of the Sorkin characters to say. Well, in particular, Janine Garofalo, who's Lou, who's the...
Oh, she was wonderful.
She's the media consultant, and she says point blank, "You Bartlett people have drunk some kind of Kool-Aid. I'm a political professional. I know I'm a Democrat. I know who I want to get elected. And if I don't do this, like, dance of intimacy with Santos, that's fine. I still want to get him elected. Like, I don't have to
go
to my
grave
believing in Santos." And I think that shows, like, an ambitious, smart person who's in her 40s, who's, quite frankly, in the prime of her working, like, political operative years. And you don't have to be, I feel, you don't have to be in love with something to be a professional.
Right. I mean, they brought in some great actors to be the secondary roles, like Patricia Richardson on Alan Alda's side.
For Vintage Campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And Stephen Root. Also.
Stephen Root's good. My opposition is partly is because the Obama-Hillary McCain election, I paid way more attention to politics than I had in a while, and I learned all the stuff. I was watching polls like constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I was refreshing them. I was watching the numbers, doing the math, doing all that stuff, and I learned all that stuff by actually living through that campaign. So then I watched this show
years later,
and I'm like, yeah, okay, I know this.
Right. So which is different for me?
Yeah, because
it's exactly
me,
the same
or
time.
Me, or
right.
Me, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, okay, I'm not learning anything. You're not showing me something I don't know.
So besides the election, the big thing that happens in these seasons is they deal with Leo's death.
Right.
Which is
right.
just
it's
7. But we're talking about 6 and 7.
Wait, does he die in 6 or 7?
7.
He has a heart attack in 6.
He officially on
the
show.
The character,
the
actual
dies
actor dies. Right.
Yeah. In season 7.
The character dies in 7
during filming in season 7.
On election day.
Christmas
day. That's the episode. Election day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's when the character dies. He
yes.
died around Christmas.
Right, right. But that was
right.
a heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, the thing is I liked his relationship with Chenoweth. She's like his assistant on the show.
The Aaron Sorkin's ex-girlfriend, Kristen.
Really? I didn't know that.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, he did that.
That's the character Ainsley Hayes was based on Kristen Chenoweth.
Oh, my God.
Wait, what? But Chenoweth wasn't
a small
political...
Bond.
Oh, well,
Republican.
Okay.
Republican. That's true. No.
But I was going to say the best scene was them in the elevator, and Leo was like, let's go to dinner because he's celebrating something. And she goes, I don't think that would be appropriate with all the tension between us. And I was like, what?
Yeah, she was so plain spoken.
And she was absolutely serious about it. And Leo's going,
what
are you talking about? Because Leo is like old enough to be her grandfather. And so he has no idea. She's like, all this tension going on between us. And he's like...
On a similar note, I love right before Election Day how all the kind of couples go off.
The night before.
The night before. And Josh has no idea that they were couples at all.
Right.
Josh's like, really? Yeah?
Really? One of them's a lesbian.
One of them comes like, really?
It's like, did you know about this? And Donna's like, yes.
Yeah, everybody
so,
knew.
Now, I will say, though, as much as you don't love 6 and 7, once the election is over, you then started to like it again.
Because we were in the West Wing. Which is why I watched the show.
So you were fine with, Santos moving into the White House. Yeah. Like, you were fine with the transition period.
Yeah, the transition was great. Because
that was great. Yeah.
They got
getting Arnie Vinnick.
Yeah, they got all the people. Oh, yeah, getting Arnie Vinnick was fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, that was so good. Because it's like, you still like the character. And I liked how he pulled him in.
Yeah.
And he was like,
you're
brilliant.
Because he offers him a different job, right?
Yeah, well, no, he's like, I don't want you to be my vice president. I want you to be my, like, Secretary of
Defense
or something like that. Because the guy, Vinnick is smart.
Yeah,
and so
he
has
a lot of, overseas experience.
And he was like, you're perfect for this.
Well, what's funny is you have, life imitating art, because after Obama gets elected, he gives his rival, Hillary Clinton,
Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
So all that was really, really good, and it actually, as much as I was talking about, I hate this, when they got to the last few episodes and they actually established what the government would look like in a new season, I was like, I could totally watch that.
Oh,
and
Sam
they brought they brought Sam back exactly how they got him in the first place.
Which is great.
Was like, this is fantastic. I liked how they wrapped up everybody's story.
Yeah, they really
was happy with everyone except for
Toby.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was lame.
Toby's ending was the not the part, and just
everything
that led up to
everything,
all of that.
You know what the weird thing about Toby was? One thing. He has kids, and then he barely talks about them. Never sees them. You never see them again.
You do. Hawk and Molly?
Really.
Hawk and Molly? Yeah, you do.
Not really.
Yeah, you do.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I don't remember. Okay.
They were like 2 years old going, he took them out trick-or-treating and they had on Orioles outfits and he was mad because he's not, he's a big, is it Mets?
Yankees.
Yeah. Yankees. I'm sorry, because Mets didn't kill me.
I apologize.
Yeah, he's a big Yankees fan and he's like, you dressed my children in Orioles uniforms? Yeah,
because
they like the colors, that's right.
I didn't like the whole, was it because Toby's brother was an astronaut?
Yes.
I hated that. I was just like, oh, come on. I was like,
I liked it.
Well, they set him up at the beginning of season one.
Yeah, well, I mean, the brother being the astronaut's fine. The problem is him giving away state secrets and then having to be fired was like the worst storyline ever.
And then being investigated for treason.
Right.
Yeah.
And all.
I love how Josh
kept
going to him, though. That
But it was, he did not get a good story.
Should we move on to character talk now?
Yes.
We kind of are anyway.
And right here, we're going to take a break because this podcast is actually about 2 hours long. So we're going to split this up into two parts. The second part, when we come back with it, will be the character arcs and what we thought of those. All right, and if you guys have any feedback or want to make a comment on the West Wing podcast, please send your comments to tvcampfire@gmail.com. And I'll talk to you guys next week.